Randy's scripture this morning continues in John 9. John 9, this time verses 35 to 41. Jesus heard that they had thrown him out. This is the blind man who was healed. And when he found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" "Who is he, sir?" the man asked. "Tell me so that I may believe in him." Jesus said, "You have now seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you." Then the man said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. Jesus said, "For judgment I have come into this world, so that the blind will see, and those who see will become blind." Some Pharisees who were with him heard him say this and asked, "What, are we blind too?" Jesus said, "If you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains."
Thank you, Lisa, for sharing. I appreciate greatly the work of the planning committee, because it was in the worship planning committee, I think it was Lisa, who said, "This is such a hopeful message, such a hopeful theme." Now, you would think the person who initiated this theme and thought about it and sensed God nudging him to do that would have had that thought when he began it, but he did not. I sat there, and we're meeting via Zoom, so I'm sitting there, I'm thinking, oh, that's a whole nother side. And it opened my eyes, and I'm grateful for that, because I do believe it is very hopeful. And I also want to say that as we look at this theme, I want to encourage us, this is not a command, look instead for what God can do. It is a learning opportunity. It's, can we learn to look for what God can do? Because that's not our natural tendency. Our natural tendency is to think, how are we going to fix this? What has this person done before? How is life supposed to go? And we're going to move forward. But this theme is an invitation to look instead what God can do. Now, let me confess to you and acknowledge to you and in some ways give a postlude to my sermon from 2 weeks ago. Now, I'm sure that all of you remember that sermon deeply. But one of the things that I suggested in that sermon was they're willing to take witness from an unqualified source. The idea that God may speak to us from people that we do not think qualified, such as this blind man was to the Pharisees and to the other religious leaders. Monday morning, the Monday after that sermon that I preached, I was in my office doing some work, and the office phone rang. And, you know, caller ID is a wonderful thing. If it says spam, I'm going to guess most of us just ignore it. But it also identifies particular numbers, and a name came up on the screen of who was calling, and it was someone from the past, not someone who attended or was a part of this church. I want to be clear so you don't say, well, who was this? But the name came up, and I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to listen to the same old thing. But then my own sermon started ringing in my head. Look instead to what God can do through this person who's calling that I think is an unqualified source. So I thought, well, I'll pick up the phone. I picked up the phone, and two things happened. Number one, the person shared with me some gratitude and some things that they said they took in from myself and from some others in this church that I would have thought they never took in. Why? Because God was working even when I didn't think so. Secondly, after about 6 or 7 minutes, the person said, "Okay, I have to go, goodbye." That person never used those words before. I usually had to say after a half hour, "Okay, I need to go." You see, I was reminded to look instead for what God can do. And when I took the risk on a simple phone call, I was reminded in very real ways what God can do and how God works. And I was reminded that I often don't see it, I don't anticipate it, and there's times that I don't even believe in it, yet God works. So that's what I want us to think about in this passage as we continue through this John 9 passage, which is, to me, it's such a fascinating passage. There's so much, and that's why I broke it up into three different sermons, but this finishing passage is so interesting. You know, when things are going good, we don't look to blame people, we look to praise people. When things are going good, when we can take any situation in our life, we get a new job and everything's new and fresh and, we're excited and it's all wonderful. We get married and everything's wonderful, we have a new spouse and it's all wonderful. We have a new baby, we get a new baby and it's wonderful. But as we all know, there comes a day when it's not quite so wonderful. When that baby's crying in the middle of the night and can't be consoled, we may wonder, whose idea was it to have a child? Or when that baby's 5 or 6 and throwing a temper tantrum out in public, then we probably tend to say, they behave just like you. Not normally helpful. We see this in sports this past week. I think it was this past week it happened, maybe the week before, when the Eagles fired their head coach and they began looking for a new coach. It is amazing to hear all the negativity that comes out because things didn't go well. Just not too long ago, what did we hear Doug Peterson say? This is the new normal. I'm going to guess he didn't say that this week. Although he's still collecting a pretty good paycheck, so he probably can survive. But we have this negativity of all these problems that arise. And you see, that's what happens in the real life. When problems come, and as was mentioned earlier, 2020 was a difficult year. When it's tough in so many ways, we can look to blame. We can look to find fault. And I believe more than ever, we need to lift our eyes to say, look instead what God can do. And look instead to what God has done. And look instead to what God is doing. And so much of it counts on our posture. And so in this lesson, I'm asking, I think, what is your posture? It's interesting, in this lesson, Jesus finds this man. Now understand, a lot of things have already happened. Jesus healed the man. People got upset. The Pharisees tried to go to the man, and they said, did he heal you on the Sabbath? Remember, they wanted to find fault with Jesus for healing someone on the Sabbath and for healing of his blindness. And then they went to his parents. They said, you speak for him. And his parents said, well, we're not going to speak for him. He's of age. Let him be his own, because they did not want to be thrown out of the synagogue. So the man tells them his story. They get upset with the man. They say, who are you to speak to us? You were born in sin. And they go on and on. And so we don't know where he's at, but it says Jesus, when he found that he was driven out, he went and found him. And Jesus asked this question. He said, do you believe in the Son of Man? And he answered, who is he, sir? You see, what's so interesting in this story is this man testified to the works of God before he even understood who Jesus was. Wrap your head around that. There are people who may testify to the grace and power of God before they embrace some of the faith that we also believe. But notice what this man said. Tell me why? I'd like to have that information. No, he says, tell me so that I may believe in him. You see, his posture is, I want to know. His posture is, I want to take this in. His posture is, I want to believe in him. I want to know more. I want to more fully know what he is about. It's a posture of being a sponge and taking in with the man what Jesus has to tell him. And so I ask, what is our posture? You see, our posture says so much. Now, let me be clear. I know that I am not always accurate when I view other people's posture. I know other people may look at me and not also assess my posture accurately. But there are times when our posture gives a lot away. When someone's talking to us and they're trying to give us information of something they want us to do, and we're standing there like this, we're probably not very receptive. Just a hunch from what I'm told. A few weeks ago, I was out on the disc golf course with another gentleman. We were playing disc golf, and he was trying to tell me how to throw my flick a little better. Not that it doesn't need it, but I wasn't up for being, and after a while, he said, I can tell you don't want to listen to what I'm saying. He was right. You see, there are times that we don't want to receive what others have to say. This man's posture was, tell me so that I may believe in him. Children, one of the blessings of children is they're often sponges to take in all kinds of stuff. They may not say it in that way, but they're watching, they're learning, they're observing, they're taking it in. And it's an amazing ability they have. Unfortunately, as we get older, we lose much of that. And so we are called, and if we're going to look instead for what God can do, if we're going to, instead of looking who is to blame, if we're going to be open and live with hope and spread that hope in our world, in our individual lives, in our family, in our relationships, and the broader world and the culture in which we live, we need to say, is our posture one of being open? Is our posture one of saying, Lord, I want to hear what God has to say. I want to hear how God wants to direct me. I want to deviate my schedule based on what God wants me to do, not based on what I think needs to be accomplished. Lord, I want to listen to the unqualified source. I want to take time in the busyness of all that I think I need to have to do. I want to take time to listen to another person. I want to take time to walk alone with God. Whatever it may be, what is our posture? Too often in the church, our posture is, we're good Christians, we'll help inform other peoples how to be like us. It's not a posture of humility. It's not a posture of asking God to correct us. It's not a posture of asking God, God, what do you want us to learn? This past week, I participated in an interview in one of the churches that I work with. They're looking for a new pastor. I normally sit in on those interviews, and it's really interesting to sit there and hear these questions because you're being asked of pastor's type, and we pastor types like to answer those questions. But I sit there and I say nothing. But the person who was being interviewed was being asked about sin, and he answered something like this. He said, I worry more about the sin God convicts me of when I'm on my walks and God says, you know, here's something in your life you still need to deal with. As I sat and I heard that, two things. I know it wasn't the answer the search committee was expecting to hear. And secondly, I thought, how frequently in the church do we hear that? This idea is not to make us feel bad or to be condemned, but to say, God, what more do you want to do in my life? What more, God, can you do? How do you want to transform? You see, what is our posture? You see, the problem is, if our posture is not a posture to receive what God has to give to us, if our posture is not one of saying, God, I want to be continually transformed, God, I want to continually to grow into the salvation that you wish to bestow upon us, I want to grow in that, if it's not that posture, then the struggle is the light of Jesus comes to us as judgment. You see, Jesus, when he was later then talking in this passage, he said to the man said, you have seen him, and the one speaking to you is he. And the man then said, Lord, I believe. And it says he worshiped him. It's interesting. In the Gospel of John, this is the only place where anybody worshiped Jesus. It's the only place. Worship is referred to worshiping God. Because back earlier they talked about, but this is the only place where an individual is given credit for worshiping Jesus. Not the Pharisees, not the disciples, this man, blind, who some perceive to have been born in sin. And then Jesus added this. He said, I came into this world for judgment so that those who do not see may see and those who do see may become blind. You see, here Jesus somehow gets the audience of the Pharisees. They're starting to peek in. They're starting to listen. What's he talking about? Is he getting under our skin again? That's what they're asking. You see, Jesus said, I came to bring judgment. Now, how does Jesus bring judgment into the world? Well, think about light. Most of us enjoy light. It's nice to be here in the light. If it was completely dark in here, it would not be fun to be sitting in here. To just hear a voice coming out of the darkness and not be able to see one another, it's not good. We like light. Light is a good thing. But, you know, there's sometimes that light, if it's very light, if it's very bright and piercing, it's very difficult. A number of years ago, I'm going to say maybe 5 or 6 years ago, when my father was still able to go to our hunting cabin, you know, part of the ritual was my father was older, like older men know, you get up and go to the bathroom many times during the night. My dad did that. And our cabin, it's a one-room cabin. There's no bedrooms. There's no kitchen. It's one room. We're all on bunks, and my dad was on the opposite end of mine. Now, understand, this is a 20-foot cabin, so we're not talking way over there. We're talking pretty close. He's on the other one. When he would get up, he had a little flashlight he would turn on. One year, he decided, well, if a little flashlight is good to help me get about, a bigger one would be better. And he brought his spotlight, a million candlelight power thing, to use to help himself get up in the bathroom. Knowing my father, I knew when he got up and this beam of light goes on and this little 20 by 20 cabin is lit up like whatever, I know, don't say anything. Because you know what happens if you say anything? Yep, that beam of light's going to come right at you. Some of my nephews are not quite as bright as our bunks are divided. Those on the lower level are 50 and over, and then the upper ones, if you're under 50, you go up in the upper bunks. The upper bunks haven't lived with my father long enough to know that, and one of them made a comment, yo! Next thing you know, there goes the beam of light. Now, what does that person do when that beam of light comes right on them? It's one of these. You see, we don't want to see that light. It makes us go. It's like, oh my gosh, turn that thing off. You see, that's how light is. We love light. When I'm sitting in the woods waiting for the light to come, I can't wait for that gradual daylight to come, and all of a sudden it sees light and you can see. But when I get that beam of light right in my eye, whether it be a sun glare or whether it be a flashlight or a picture, you know, we're blinking. We can't see. You see, that's what Jesus was saying. He came into the light that those who do not see may see and those who do see may become blind. What he's really saying is those who are willing to perceive the light, those who want to receive the light, they will see it, but those who don't want to receive it, they're going to reject it. They're going to say, get that light out of my face. That's not showing the picture I want to see. You see, that's what happened. And the Pharisees, it's so interesting. The Pharisees near him heard this and they said, he's not talking about us, is he? That's literally what they said. Although they asked it another way. Surely we're not blind, are we? We're not. You see, that was the trouble Jesus had with the Pharisees over and over again. He brought the light of God, this idea that God is a God of love, a God who wants to transform people, a God who wants them to trust and move into God and to leave behind some of their ways of their laws and their harshness and some of those things. And as he continued to point it out, they were like that person wanting to pull the covers over the head and say, keep that light away. I want to keep resting in my own comfortable place the way I'm in. Leave me alone. You see, Jesus, we see throughout his lifetime, he brings judgment. You see, when the Pharisees wanted to do, when they didn't like Jesus' message, what did they do? He brought judgment, not that he brought judgment upon them, but the way that they responded to it was the judgment. It says they wanted to kill him, they wanted to get rid of him. You see, it divides. There were those, this man who was born blind, he worshiped him. And yet the Pharisees want to get rid of him. You see, that's how the light brings judgment. And so when God sheds light in our world, when God sheds light to us to help us, to guide us, if our posture is, no, God, we don't need help. We're just fine the way we are. You just take care of those people over there, and I got this carried. You see, it's that judgment that comes to us because we reject like the Pharisees. And the Pharisees asked, surely we are not blind. Jesus said, if you were blind, you would not have sinned. But now that you sin, now that you say we see, he says, your sin remains. It's so interesting. In this passage, those whose sin remains are those who claim and think they are so good. If you remember, how did this story begin? This story began by saying to Jesus, who sinned, this man or his parents? You see, it began by those who thought they were righteous, those who thought they were good, those who thought they had this God thing all worked out, and they saw this person as a theological speculation, so they said, who is it? Who sins, that man? And in the end of the story, Jesus saying is, take a look at yourselves. It's not him. It's not them. But it's you. And what does he say? He says, now that you say we see, your sin remains. You see, their sin remains because they were not willing to receive the light that Jesus gave to them. As they heard from Jesus, as they witnessed his testimony, somehow they continue to say, Jesus, leave us alone. We want to go about this. You're messing up our faith understanding. You're taking it in a new direction. We don't want people like this giving witness. We don't like that you healed on the Sabbath. And their list went on and on. You see, Jesus even suggested that if they were blind, they would have had an excuse. But he says, because you claim to see, your sin remains. This morning, I invite us to be open to this idea that if we're going to look instead what God is doing, we need to listen to the light that God sends to us. We need to have a posture of saying, God, I want you to show what you want me to be about, not that I'm going to go and declare what needs to be about. We sang one of my favorite hymns earlier today, and the line is, prone to wonder, Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. We sing that, but do we understand that? Do we believe that? Tomorrow morning when the phone call comes from the unqualified source, are we going to answer and say, God, what might you want me to learn through this person? What might God want me to learn through this encounter? Lord, what might you want me to learn from the person who is annoying me and I think doesn't believe or understand anything the way that they should? Whatever it is, will we be willing to say, Lord, show us your way, regardless of who you use, regardless of the method? Lord, help us to see what judgment are you bringing into our lives so that we can see more fully what you want us to be about. I look forward with great joy and great hope so that we continue to look instead to what God is going to do. Let us live with an open posture and let us see God work. Let's pray.